Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
To Mo Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Right, and we are back with another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. My name is Jason Brown. You can find me at Twitter at BrownJason with a Y. Joined this evening with my co-host, QB1JR, WR1 Miles Gorham, and RB4 Yinka Allende. What's up, fellas?
I'm okay with that. That makes me like probably the slot receiver, maybe.
Now, you saw the special teams play.
The Jerry's right in a crew, right?
Me and Jerry's the same guy.
CJ Ham.
No, hey, he's fullback. He's fullback. So.
There you go, Yinka with the popsicle, bro.
I'm telling y'all, the minute y'all get a popsicle in your life, I'm going to tell you, it's gonna slow down all your talking points, but it's going to speed up your brain. I'm telling you.
Don't say that ever again.
Never. Mm-hmm. All right. Before we get too far derailed here with Yinka and his podcast snacking, we have a great show for you guys today. We have a guest coming on in just a little bit. But before we get into our breaking news, what's going on with you guys, fellas? Any news, anything you guys want to share? How was your day?
And we back.
It was great.
I went to the Chance the Rapper concert. Last week it was.
And give no invites.
Okay. First of all, I paid for 2 tickets, and then I also paid for this, like, he had this little rock, paper, scissors thing that he did. And it was crazy, y'all. Like, Chance was insanely good at rock, paper, scissors. It's not even, like, a game for him. He's well coached. He went on an island or something and had, like, a personal trainer when it came to rock, paper, scissors. But his concert was cool because, you know, Chance already has like a lot of energy when he's on stage and stuff, but you know, he brought that like Kanye West like fire show type thing, all the explosions and all that stuff that was going off. But yeah, it was hot, y'all.
And JR, how about you? Stop laughing at Yinka and his popsicle, dog.
I'm good.
I wish y'all could see, because
in between texts,
I'll take a bite. So go ahead, y'all.
So I've been locked in the house the past 2 days. I bought MLB The Show 17, and I'm not a big baseball on TV guy. I like watching it live, but it seems like the most boring sports to watch are always the funnest video games. You know, Tiger Woods was always fun, and MLB The Show is amazing. So I've been locked in the creative player for the past 2 days. So that's what I've been doing.
What position do you play?
Outfield, man.
Well, you never know. I like shortstop because coach would never let me play shortstop in high school. So
that just means you weren't a good athlete.
No, it's because I'm left-handed.
Come on, QB1. Come on, QB1.
How about you, Miles? Anything going on?
No, just me and the fiance, soon-to-be wife, just got a new place. So we're excited to be moving here in the next couple weeks. So. Nice, can't wait to get out of this tiny place you live now.
It is real for Miles. He bought a house and about to get married. No backing out now, man.
Not after those every week bridal showers that he's having. Miles don't want to give back no gifts.
No, those are mine now.
All right. Well, let's slide into some breaking news real quick. You know, Vikings have done some things here. I think the thing that people were most excited about was Will Sutton. Being signed. He was a guy that a lot of people liked back in the 2014 draft. I guess, JR, what can you tell us about him? What's the scouting report on Mr. Sutton?
So, just a little background on Will Sutton. He was a fourth-round pick, I believe, of the Bears a couple years ago. Bought in when Lovie Smith was still there in Chicago, when they were still running the 4-3 scheme. You know, just didn't seem like he was ever a fit there. The Bears transitioned to John Fox and Vic Fangio's 3-4 scheme where he was playing defensive end at 4-5 technique. And he just didn't seem to be a fit there. in that position. But just a little background on him. He's a very good player in college, had 23.5 tackles for loss his junior year there. So he was very productive. Jason wasn't a big fan of him after he seen the spider chart the other day. But he wasn't. He's not an overly great athlete, but he's a guy that's very smart, undersized. So he has to find his niche, so to speak, in different ways he can win in the trenches. So he's a guy that can penetrate, and he wins with the leverage battle as well. So he has a chance to come in and compete at that three technique spot or at that nose tackle spot with Shamar Stephan being Linval's backup. So I think he landed in a great spot.
Perfect. And Miles, I know JR hinted at it a little bit, but what do you think about his fit with the Vikings defense, and where do you think he's going to fit into the rotation just based on what you've seen of him and the skill set that he brings?
Yeah, I think JR brought up a lot of good points. I think, you know, they got rid of Toby, which I know Toby seemed to be a fan favorite for some people. And he had a really good preseason last year. But I think what he brings is just a really good rotational depth, you know, both at the three tech and the nose. You know, we have a lot of question marks, especially at the three tech and then behind Linval Joseph at nose, you know, with Shamar Stephan. We don't know what the plan is with him. I think, you know, Will Sutton take over his backup role as at nose, or – you know, could he be in the rotation with a guy like, you know, in competition with a guy like Tom Johnson, who's coming off a season-ending surgery last year? So I think there's a lot there. He could compete for those backup rotational spots. I liked it.
And lastly, Yinka, I know that every time we bring in another one of these depth guys, it hurts you a little bit. It's like Rick is really going after all your boys this offseason because you are the president, I don't know, captain. We'll go with president of the Sharif Floyd fan club. I think largely because of that GIF file you like to share with Sharif catching it and signaling first down on the sideline. But honestly, though, real, what do you think that all these signings and all these depth that they're bringing in, that they could rotate at three tech, what does that mean for Sharif, and what are you thinking that means for his future with the Vikings?
You know, if I'm being perfectly honest, I mean, from everything we've seen as far as the reports, as far as, you know, some of the things that Sharif has said himself, you know, I don't think – Sharif is in the greatest position right now. I think he is probably still way more injured than the team would like to let on, as well as himself. So I think what the Vikings are doing, they are just trying to, you know, cover the bases as far as making sure that if they do have to let someone like Sharif Floyd go, or, you know, he can't play it, you know, with the Vikings anymore. Obviously, the Vikings aren't very top heavy when it comes to three technique. You saw it with Dayton Jones signing, Jaleel Johnson stepping in. And this is another depth guy. I actually went back and watched Will Sutton tape, and something that I really, really saw, like the one word that I could probably attribute to his style of play is power. You know, he had a lot of power and strength every time I saw him. Not the greatest as far as pass rush moves, not overly fast, but definitely he brings a lot of power to the table. I think the Vikings are still, I mean, Jaleel Johnson might be that guy. I think the Vikings are really looking for some athleticism and not just strength, because they got beaten up so much in the middle. Shamar Stephan really couldn't do it. And I think, honestly, I think the appeal with Toby Johnson was because he was next to Tom Johnson, and people just love that whole Johnson and Johnson thing, because let's be honest, the Vikings in the middle at times played like ass. So, you know, they definitely need that definitely needed that them baby wipes and the powder or something, though. As far as Sharif goes, I do think that he still has a role here in the on the defense. What he brings to the table, he's one of the quickest guys I've ever seen get off the ball, and that might be, you know, he probably getting off the ball a little bit before the ball snap, but he does bring some little athleticism. Will Sutton signing is cool, but like Miles and JR said, I think it's more depth than anything. He's going to come in and compete. I don't think any of these guys can actually, if Sharif Floyd is fully healthy, I don't think any of them can actually win the job over him. But if he's not healthy, one of them will have to compete with each other. So,
can I just piggyback too real quick, Jer or Yinka?
Yeah.
I do think, you know, at this point, I don't think we're going to see the Vikings release Sharif Floyd, because there's no point, because his contract's really fully guaranteed for this season. So, I think, you know, whether they start him on PUP, whatever the deal is with him, with his injury, you know, with the nerve damage that we're hearing, if they can get anything from him this season, like if they start him on the PUP, you know, or do, you know, do IR, bring him back at some point later in the season, whatever they do, if they can get anything out of him this season, it's a win at this point because his contract's guaranteed and they can't release him. So if they can find a way to get anything from him, I think Yinka made a good point that none of the guys they brought in currently are better than what Floyd is if healthy. So, you know, if they can get anything from him at any point this season, I just think that's a plus.
He'll start on the puck. That's what I think.
Yeah, for sure.
To do that. And, you know, they might try to use that whole contract tolling thing with him as well.
I was going to say, are we still talking about Sharif right now, y'all?
Does that work in the fifth year, though?
Yeah, as long as they're in the last year of their deal, it works. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be a good idea.
Yeah, and so they also signed Tagaloa. I know we planned on having a little conversation about him, but we couldn't find any film really. So
yeah, who?
we're gonna slide right past that one real quick. And I know Miles, you had a take last week when we were talking about you know, your man Treadwell and Mr. Floyd and the competition that was going on there. And one of the things that you did bring up is that Treadwell would get a leg up in the offseason because, you know, Floyd was on house arrest back in Arizona. Obviously, the news broke this week that Floyd would be able to transfer up to Minnesota because of his finding a job. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, like I said before, I think I'll be the one picking him up at the airport tomorrow, so I'll make sure he gets safe and sound to Winter Park. No, for real, though. I mean, it's good for him. I mean, like I said last week, it's tough when you're coming into a brand new offense, especially coming from the Air Coryell type scheme, you know, the downfield attacking game that Bruce Arians has, to this West Coast style of offense that you know, the short game that Shermer brings. I think it's just something different for Floyd to have to adjust to. So I think it's important for him to be here. And like I said before, I thought it was a benefit for Treadwell for him to not be here because that's just more reps for Treadwell to take. So now it just kind of gives Floyd that opportunity to kind of get into the offense now earlier than I think we all thought he would have been. You know, we thought it was going to be training camp. Now it's going to be next week for mini camp and OTAs and all that. So it's big for both guys, I think. I mean, I still personally think that they're going to give Treadwell the opportunity to take the job, give him the first opportunity. And if Floyd ends up taking it, good for him. I mean, for me personally, I just want the best guy to win. So whoever wins it and takes it, you know, good for them. So.
Cool. Yinka, JR, anything else to add, or are we good on this one?
You know, I think it's huge that Floyd can at least be in the facility just so, you know, he's getting those mental reps as well. Maybe he's not as on the field with the team, so to speak, but he's getting those mental reps and he's processing the information. So, and I'm not sure if he can work out with the team or not. I haven't dug into the details of it, but, you know, he's there with Bradford and he's also there, you know, learning with his new teammates as well. So it's absolutely huge that he's there.
I think Darren posted something. And I think he can do all the workouts because it's work. He can do stuff for work. So that counts as like OTAs and all that. So it sounds like he's going to be able to participate.
Yeah, that's huge, Dan.
Yeah.
All right, then. Well, that wraps it up for that bit. We are now going to transition awkwardly into the interview that we have with Luke from Purple PTSD. So please hold while we get Luke on the line. All right, and so let's hop right into this wonderful interview, the segment that we have here. We have Luke from Purple PTSD on with us this evening. How's it going, Luke?
Doing great. How are you guys?
Yeah, doing all right. We're going to start off. It's a question that might be a little awkward, and I don't even know if it's a question that's if it's necessarily your fault, but Miles is a little salty. Miles is upset because... Because he followed you or who I guess he assumes to be you on Twitter, the Purple PTSD account that you sometimes will tweet from, and he didn't get that follow back.
Miles
was hurt. So ooh, I just
hurt.
Give you a moment.
That's a bad thing that I did. Yeah, no, that's totally fair. Let me fix that right now.
I might have unfollowed you just because. I'm just playing. I don't even know.
There we go. It's fixed.
Boom.
It's fixed.
Boom. So Miles, we good? We good, Miles? Can we go forward with things now?
Yeah, I don't know. I know there's that little bit of animosity that will always be there, you know? Luke
it's
is never going
to
be.
Take a long time to kill. I definitely get that.
Hey, we'll get there.
We'll definitely there. Already think I was following you.
We'll get there though. We'll definitely get there.
All
right. Luke has to be careful with his mentions. Every life from Miles, he just has to be careful.
All right. Well, glad we can move past that and maybe break the ice a little bit with things. So, Luke, you're obviously someone that I've interacted with quite a bit on Twitter, and
yeah.
One of the things that we talk about a lot, and one of the things we joke about, is the very vocal arguments that Vikings Twitter will have nearly daily about Sam, Teddy, and what that ends up breaking down to. Sam is average, he's mediocre. What's good enough for a quarterback? And so I figured, since we have you on the pod today, I wanted to get into kind of your thoughts on team building, quarterback evaluation. Like, what do we need out of a quarterback, or what does a team need out of a quarterback to be successful?
So I think like when you're trying to build a team, right, if you want to put yourself into the shoes of a GM, you should think about this team back right now. And if you have, if especially if you're in that world of like, well, we're kind of always on the bubble of the playoffs, and you think of like the Texans or the Colts that are like maybe in it and maybe they can make some noise, but usually they're like kind of in the middle. You have to think about like what's holding those teams back, and to just assume that it's the quarterback, I think, is a dangerous mistake to make, because I look at other teams in the league, like the Saints, who have been 7-9 for like 19 years in a row now. The quarterback's not their problem. They should definitely focus on the defense. And that's a pretty easy thing to like diagnose and figure out why it's a problem. I think the same thing about the Colts. It's not certainly not the quarterback that's the issue over there. It's all of the things, because their roster is hot garbage. And I think about the Vikings, and I think the same thing. I don't think there's definitely problems with Sam Bradford and things we can be annoyed by. But I think on the whole, it's definitely not the thing that derailed the season. It was the injuries. It was having third string tackles. It was having to start TJ Clemmings for, many, many games. And I think those are the things that we should pursue and try to fix. I think those are the things that did the most damage. And those are the places where we can make the greatest improvement. So if you apply value and apply your resources to like tackle, or to something like the defensive tackle problem that we have with like Sharif Floyd and his nerve damage and stuff, and we've applied a lot of resources to that, you can definitely make more waves than if you applied all your resources to a quarterback, especially because quarterback is that, like, finding a way to upgrade to Sam Bradford, short of praying for Teddy to get healthy, is like probably going to break your bank, right? Like, how are you going to go get one unless you like were to draft a guy and hope that he turns out, or you have to like get insanely lucky with somebody that is undiscovered.
Yeah, and I think that you made some really good points there. And I think the Saints, they bring up another vein in this conversation. And I know that one that Yinka has some very strong opinions on, because you look at a team like the Saints that has, they have a future Hall of Fame quarterback in Drew Brees, breaking records on a regular basis. But they've allocated, and there was a point there where they allocated so many of their resources towards, the quarterback position, and then the offense, that they struggled to kind of build that complete team around even an elite quarterback that's able to be competitive on a regular basis. From your perspective, if someone's looking to build a team, like, how do you feel, or what are your thoughts on the QB market as it currently exists? And I guess as we tie it back to the Vikings, Sam has a season similar to the one that he had last season. What kind of money are you comfortable spending on Sam Bradford as your quarterback?
Oh, Jesus, that's a good one, because I don't have the numbers in front of me for like what quarterbacks are actually worth when they're like middling like that. But I think it's somewhere in the 20 million range. I think that's like around the average-ish for like what starting level quarterbacks are worth. And I think it also depends, it always, always, always depends on Teddy. But if we're sitting in a world where Teddy is injured, or if he comes back but he doesn't come back at the same level, then we have to think about Sam Bradford as a long-term option, and then that makes the contract look different too. I think in reality, we're looking at franchising him, which kind of sucks, because I think that would be like 25, and that would be a little bit of an overpay. But I also don't see a better solution out there, again, short of like praying for Teddy to come back.
Well, and Luke, I got a question
expensive.
With that too, yeah. Is that like franchising and going a little like $5 million over than what you would normally like to for a guy like Sam Bradford? Is that but not investing long term by franchising for one season? Is that, do you feel that kind of makes it a little more worth it by, you know, giving him that extra few million for the 1 year than, you know the long term potential?
Totally. Because the real opportunity cost of money is like, which other guys can you not sign, right? So like, if you do end up franchising him, which, yeah, it'd be an overpay for a year, but you're right, it's like after that year, then the cost has been paid, then, you know, you can maneuver around that still when you're trying to like re-sign Xavier Rhodes. You know, you can maybe backload the contract or something like that, and right, it gives you a little bit of wiggle room. But if you're locked up with a guy with a whole bunch of guaranteed money for like years on years on years, then, you know, that's a problem that you have to think about when you're trying to re-sign Rhodes or re-sign Everson Griffin, who I think his contract is coming up too.
And kind of to piggyback off a point that I thought was a great point, Luke, is my biggest gripe with quarterbacks with how expensive they are. And not just expensive in terms of dollars allocated to them, but also the draft capital that's used to get these great quarterbacks. I mean, if you look at the top 10 quarterbacks that are in the league right now, 95% to 98% of them are all first round picks, and they're high first round picks.
Seven right now who are not
rounders. The top 10 right now?
In starting. There's like seven of them who are not first rounders.
Really?
There's Brady. Those guys
there's Brady. Yeah, there's Brady. There's
Dak Prescott and like a couple other ones. I don't know. A few months ago, I wrote an article basically saying just that about like what draft capital quarterbacks are worth, and listed them out. And there's like seven or eight that are not first round picks. It's amazing what they're worth nowadays. And now they're worth two first round picks. Chiefs.
Yeah, that's too much. And I looked it up, and it looks like right now for starting salaries that going into next year, Tom Brady is kind of at the bottom of that, you know, I guess the top tier at, you know, 20.5 mil. And then you're kind of moving up there, Matt Ryan. There's a little bit of a break between Tom Brady and Ryan Tannehill, no less, in terms of the contract amounts. And I guess you know, as we're talking about that, and Yinka, he rallies against this often, but it's a point that I somewhat agree with in terms of quarterback's the most important position. I don't think anyone would disagree that you have to have a quarterback to be successful in the league, but also with the way that the quarterback salaries are rising more quickly than, you know, the other positions, is there a point where maybe you're better off not chasing the market on these quarterbacks and looking for an alternative, like maybe trying to draft that young guy every couple of years and grooming him in your system versus, you know, paying a Kirk Cousins or a Sam Bradford or whomever, you know, $26-27 million, whatever the market might dictate for you going into next year?
Yeah, I think getting like, if we could have gone after like a Josh Dobbs in the fifth round or fourth round or whatever, something like that, I think you should always be taking stabs because quarterback is so important. Like, if I were to be a GM, my greatest nightmare, the thing that would keep me up at night and wake me up in cold sweats, would be entering the quarterback market. It's such a nightmare to be in the quarterback market because you just have to pay out the nose for a guy. I mean, the Chiefs just paid out the nose for a guy who's like very much not ready to play quarterback and might never be. And that's kind of amazing to be in that market at all. And even if I have a guy like Kirk Cousins or Alex Smith or Sam Bradford, yeah, I would definitely want to, you know, go get insurance and go pick a guy in the fourth round and see if I can't get lucky with a Dak Prescott or take stabs at it. Yeah, that's absolutely worth it, as long as you're not like massively reaching on people and picking Mitch Leidner.
And yeah, that's another point. Man, you got to.
How dare you talk about quarterback
like that? Whoa! Let's address that. How the NFL just screwed that all that up and not taking in potential should have been. Future first rounder Mitch Leidner.
I heard Todd McShay's been getting a lot of crap for that too. It's pretty funny.
As well he should have.
Yeah.
He didn't.
He already has not made it. He already got cut from a team.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he went to the Ravens for a little bit. And then.
Wow.
And now I think he's going to the Panthers or something.
As like a tight end.
So Lucas, one of the things that you did just bring up there, and I know that it's something that I'm not necessarily sure you agree with wholeheartedly, just because of how I know you feel about Alex Smith based on some of our conversations. What are your thoughts on the Chiefs kind of looking at who they have in Alex Smith, who is in many ways what people say we have in Sam. It's a safe, manage the offense type of quarterback. Alex
is saying that about Teddy too, by the way.
Yeah. Just talking about quarterbacks in general here, but you have an Alex Smith guy who's shown himself to be very safe, conservative type of quarterback. If you have a defense and a running game, he's good enough to get you consistently into the playoffs. But now we're seeing a second team. So San Fran first. Now we're seeing the Chiefs realize that if we're going to try to win that Super Bowl, maybe he's not good enough to get us over that hump. What are your thoughts on kind of that thought process as it pertains to the Chiefs and them really making that huge move to get a Mahomes, the guy they look at as having more upside?
So Kansas City is really interesting because, like I said, I just said before, like you should look at the thing that's holding you back and then address that. And the Chiefs have like disproportionately spent their resources on defense in terms, like if you just look at their draft history, like their top picks have all but, Marcus Peters and Dontari Poe and like all of these, huge defensive players. And they've spent so disproportionately on defense 4 years that their offense has kind of struggled. I think Alex Smith was never the thing holding them back, which is why I always kind of stand up for him, because I think he's, better than the, he'll never win you, he'll never win you a game, he'll never lose you. I think he's a little better than that. And I think his mobility gets underrated too. People don't talk about him as a read option quarterback, which he is. I think what they did with Mahomes is interesting. And I do in general support the idea of, if you don't have a top five quarterback, yeah, try to go get some more quarterbacks because it's an important position. Try to upgrade. Why not? And it's usually worth a risk. But I think they overspent way too much on Pat Mahomes. I mean, you spent two for. I mean, think about how mad people on Vikings Twitter are about spending a first and a future fourth on Bradford, and you just spent a first and a future first, who might not ever be ready to play in the NFL, and they know how raw he is. And now they're going to have, you would think a perfect situation for him to like sit and develop, but that never, ever happens. What quarterback has actually sat for a whole year and developed? I guess Paxton Lynch, and he only played because there was an injury once. That's the only thing I can think of in the last like 5 years.
Everybody wants to
come in, play week 8 and not be good. And then they're going to get rid of Alex Smith and he'll be a bust.
I'd
be worried about.
I think that's part because now what it's becoming is organizations are obviously feeling so much pressure, not just from the fan base, but from obviously guys from up top, owners and stuff, who maybe don't know as much football as these GMs and these head coaches, who know that some of these quarterbacks do need 2 and 3 years to sit behind either a vet or just sit, not start right away to be able to learn. Yes, I do understand there's a component of learning while you're on the field, but at the same time, like you look at guys like, Deshaun Kaiser, you look at guys like, Pat Mahomes that we're talking about right now, like these guys are raw and these guys do need time to develop. And I'm actually surprised that not more GMs are not letting that noise of, we got to start them because we've used a first round pick on them. Let's not forget Aaron Rodgers had, he had a first round grade on him and he was picked in the first round and he got to sit 3 years behind Brett Favre. Now, do we think that, Aaron Rodgers would be the same player that he would be if he had not sat those 3 years? I don't know if he would have been. We could have gotten super two raw, more. Wasn't he? What?
He was like super raw, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was too. He was super raw. Well, but I mean, yeah.
I mean, between him and Alex Smith, a lot of people thought he was going to be the, going to San Francisco. But, they ended up choosing Alex Smith. But, Green Bay got the better end of that deal.
So JR is our kind of our resident QB, QB1 in here. Like, what are your thoughts on the aggressive move or that thought that, if your quarterback isn't good enough, you need to go and do something drastic or dramatic to bring a guy in? And then what do you think about Mahomes and what he needs to work on for this to work out from a Kansas City perspective?
First I want to talk about the Trubisky trade. it's not as bad as people make it out to be, in my opinion, because if you go back and look what they gave up, I think they gave up 2 threes and a second round pick, I believe it was, as opposed to the Chiefs who gave up 2 first round picks. And I know they just gave that up to move up one spot, but let's say Trubisky turns out to be as good as he's advertised to be or what people think he can be, the move really doesn't look as bad as many people say. And you see the fan reactions, they were really mad. But now let's go to the subject of the whole sit and develop thing. I kind of think it's overrated, in my opinion. And I think as long as you have a decent offensive line, your quarterback can learn on the fly. And, you know, we see that with Dak Prescott. We've seen that with Russell Wilson. When he first came into the league, their O-line was decent. Now it's a disaster right now, but, you know, he's developed now. So you really don't have to worry about that offensive line as much because of his escapability. But I'm more in the fold of, you know, throw them out there. Let's see what they can do. We've seen it with Teddy Bridgewater. He sat, what, 3 games behind Matt Castle? And he went out there with, you know, well, Castle went down to injury, but Teddy sat out, what, 3 games, and he went out there and he played well. He didn't look, you know, shell-shocked or anything like that. And then you see a guy like Dak Prescott go out there. He was sharp from day one. So it just depends on, you know, the type of person they are, the type of player they are. But, you know, it just depends on how they are. And, you know, let's say Mahomes was to go out there from day one. I'm not saying he would be a stud or anything, but I don't think he would be, you know, chaotic because, you know, he's a guy that's going to take chances down the field and everything like that. So, you know, he's going to make mistakes. It happens. So I'm more in the mode of letting guys learn on the fly as long as you have a decent O-line. If you don't, it's going to end up like a David Carr situation with the Texans.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Hold on, real quick.
Go ahead.
What about some of the guys that just – they come into the league, but they're just not quite ready to read defenses in the at the NFL level compared to, like, the college level? Like, some of those guys just quite aren't quite ready to do it, even those first-round type guys. Like, I think, you know, because the pre-snap reads and the – you know, and be able to adjust and move in the pocket in the NFL level compared to the college level is just drastically different. Does that kind of give you any kind of like wavering aspect of kind of sitting guys for any amount of time?
It doesn't, because, I mean, how are they going to learn? They ain't going to do it by sitting on the bench. I mean, you can do it in practice, but practice reps are different from game reps. When those bullets are flying and those live shots are going, that's the only way they're going to learn. That's my whole thing. You're not going to learn it in practice. You can get the mental reps in practice, but the game is totally different from practice. So as long as you have a decent O-line, I'm fine with throwing the quarterback out there because that's the only way they're truly going to learn. And it's all a mental process at quarterback.
And I guess it's not a disagreement with QB1, but this is more of, you know, just looking at it as a whole, like how many QBs right now who've gone into the league, either been first-round pick or high-round picks, and have gone in, we've thrown them out in there, and then they failed. I think we see more of them failing. And I wonder, you know, did they fail because they were thrown out too soon? Or did they fail because, you know, whether it be system, scheme, all the coaching, all the things that, you know, are a little bit of confounding factors as far as these quarterbacks? Because, I mean, the biggest question I've always wanted to know, who would Aaron Rodgers be if he didn't have those 3 years? You know, would he still be, you know, the phenom that we see him to be, having time to completely change his, you know, throwing mechanics to be able to be what he is today? You know, I had Teddy as probably one of the highest grades I've ever given for a quarterback. And I actually truly believe he could have stepped onto the field from day one and, you know, play just as well as he did. But someone like, you know, Johnny Manziel, who I had a very, very low grade on, you know, he was kind of thrown into the fire and he did just as poorly as I thought he was going to be. Could he have developed into being a good quarterback eventually? You know,
we're not talking about Johnny Manziel this evening.
Let's go back to the preseason with Teddy though. Y'all remember the Arizona Cardinals game?
He showed it
right away. Uh-huh. That's why I say it just varies by the situation. Look at that when they played the Los Angeles game versus the Rams. Yep. He showed it early on. It just depends on the situation. Yeah.
I guess that brings in the question, what do you have to see? I mean, you obviously will see flashes from, I think, for a lot of quarterbacks, but what do you have to see to feel like, I think I'm ready to just, you know, give him the keys to the billion-dollar car to drive?
It's not that. It's, you can tell if the game is slowing down for a guy or not, and you've seen that with Dak. And, you know, I like to call it happy feet. When a guy has – when you see his feet sputtering in the pocket, that signals to me the game is moving way too fast for him. And that's why I said pocket presence is the biggest thing a quarterback can have. If a guy has pocket presence, I think he has a chance at being successful in the NFL, in my opinion. And you see a guy like Dak, he has outstanding pocket presence, and he's a guy that stays calm all the time. So, and like I said, you've seen it in preseason with that.
Well, it's why we didn't see Jared Goff start right away, because he wasn't ready to start right away. Like, they knew the second they got to training camp, He wasn't ready. Like, there was no way he was ready to start. I mean, I know it was between him or Case Keenum. But at that point, I mean, he wasn't beating out Case Keenum. So, I mean, we could talk. I'm not going to get into the Case Keenum thing because he's our quarterback, our backup quarterback. So I'm not going to slander him. But, you know what I'm saying, though? Like, they knew he wasn't ready. Like, there was nothing that Goff was doing at all that, like, showed that he could handle being the starting quarterback for the Rams, at least for sure early on. I mean, he didn't play very well when he did get the opportunity. But I just had a quick question for Luke based off the draft and the quarterbacks, like, you know, trading up for Deshaun Watson, Mitchell Trubisky, and Pat Mahomes. So, like, some of the teams, like, to me, like, the Chiefs and I kind of thought the Texans would do it and the Bears, but, like, there are three teams compared to, like, the New Orleans Saints, the Los Angeles Chargers, and the New York Jets that I thought those three, the Saints, the Chargers, and the Jets were three teams I thought for sure were going to take quarterbacks early, especially for guys like Drew Brees and Phillip Rivers because they're getting up there in age. It kind of surprised me a little bit that they weren't one of those teams to kind of take a stab at one of these quarterbacks. So I just wanted to get Luke's thoughts on that just based off of, you know, we saw that the Texans take a big leap to go get Deshaun Watson and the Chiefs who, you know, Alex Smith isn't old. He's not really that old. So it just makes me think a little bit.
Well, they all went – the Texans and Chiefs went above the Saints, right? I wonder right. if they were worried about the same thing.
Yeah, and that might have been. We'll never know. But
Kaiser, and you don't want to spend, you know, 13 overall on Kaiser. But
right.
With the Jets, who'd they take? Jamal Adams, you know, that I could see that just being yeah. like, holy crap, Jamal Adams here, we just have to take him. The Chargers, they picked Mike Williams. That's a big shot, right? Right. That one got a lot of heat. So I don't know, maybe them picking, you know, Mike Williams over like Deshaun Watson or one of those quarterbacks might be something that you look back at in 5 years and go, oh my God, what did they do? I mean, yeah, when you have the chance to do that and you know, having a guy who's getting older like Phillip Rivers is or Drew Brees, like, yeah, getting the understudy seems to be a really good idea. And
right.
you know, the dream is to go back to back like the Packers did, or like the Colts did with Luck, with Manning right into life. I mean, they had the 1 year in between with the Curtis Painter thing, but like that's the dream, to go back to back, right? And to just spend as much time out of that quarterback market as possible. But yeah, I guess it's like super interesting to see. It'll be super interesting to see how that all plays out and to see how all of those moves are evaluated with hindsight, you know, in 4 years.
Yeah, definitely. I just wanted to gauge your thoughts on that, just because those are the two biggest teams I just thought we would have seen bring in a quarterback this season to develop for, you know, potentially next season, or, you know, to be able to play this season if, you know, Brees or Rivers got hurt. But
yeah, there are a couple guys I really would have loved in like the mid rounds. I think we had a chance to get Brad Kaya, but didn't do it. And like
that's who I really wanted. Yeah.
So
yeah, that would be Miles on that train.
That would have been interesting for sure.
Yep. And so last quarterback question before we get into what we know you really, really want to get into, which is the camp yes. battles and digging into all that stuff there. So from your perspective, just based on how the Minnesota Vikings are currently constructed, what is the kind of what is the baseline level of play that we need from the quarterback position in order for us to be kind of contenders to do more than just make the playoffs?
I guess it depends on how you're measuring it. I think the level of play we get from Sam Bradford, just in terms of, you know, not numbers or results, but just the skills and talent that he has, I think is sufficient, but we need to see it translate into results better. And I think to get that, you need to get the protection. You know, we've talked a lot about adjusted net yards per attempt, which is a pretty good like conglomerate stat that adds up all your yards and touchdowns and interceptions and stuff. And most importantly, it counts sacks. And Sam Bradford's adjusted net yards per attempt is pretty low because of all of the sacks that he takes. So if we can minimize that, and he, you know, he does get rid of the ball, but if we can minimize the pressure on him and then minimize the sacks, I think that will, you know, make the results a little bit more reflective of the actual level of play we get out of him. I think get Teddy back at 100%. I think either of them can play well enough to take us to, you know, that promised land. But I think the talent around him needs to significantly improve. We need to see, you know, Remmers and Reef play at the level that they played in 2015, you know, last time they were at those respective positions. So, and I think that's a big question mark. And we need to see the running game improve because it was either last or dead last, depending on your opinion of the Giants.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense there. And yeah, with that, we will now awkwardly transition into a discussion about training camp battles. And if you could just give us a little preview of the series that you do every year for Purple PTSD, and then you can lead us into what you want to talk about in terms of the most exciting camp battles that you're looking to see for us going into this upcoming season.
Yeah, so since we're in like the dead of the summer where there's like only like there's never any news and there's always this is kind of the slowest part. So this is when I do my position battle series, and it's a little different than like what you're seeing. Like Sam Ekstrom is doing a position battle series at Zone Coverage right now, which is awesome. And he's kind of going over the positions and saying, well, these are the long shots and these are the whatevers. I go player by player, who they are. This is kind of a time of year where we can step outside of like, you know, we want to be fans of the Vikings, right? And we want to root for the thing that's best for the team. But this is kind of a fun time of year to look at what's best for the individual players and look at like what they're all fighting for. Because this is the only time when you can really pay attention to guys like Nick Fett, who had a kind of interesting story about being a walk-on and then just got cut to make room for Michael Floyd, like who come from arena football and those kind of random things. And then some of the interesting nuances with like the backup quarterback battle between Case Keenum and Taylor Heinicke is super interesting and has ridiculously high stakes, because that's a battle for, you know, the winner might start games if Bradford goes down and the loser might get cut if Teddy Bridgewater comes back. So that's like an incredibly high range of outcomes that these guys are pretty much in direct competition with each other for. So the series will run 7 to 8 weeks or something like that, be an article every week about groups and, you know, who's just maybe hoping if they have a good camp and they can get a practice squad spot, and who's maybe trying to, you know, fight for a start. Maybe there's a dark horse, you know, a guy like Tom Johnson, you know, being a dark horse to like take 3 tech snaps. And it basically would just go over every player on the 90 and kind of give you an idea of who the hell you're watching on, you know, in the fourth quarter of the third preseason game.
That's awesome. That is awesome. So with, I'm sure, the fact that you've done a bit of research getting into this already, kind of which position groups do you find to be the most interesting? What do you think, I guess either with the stories off the field or the battles that you expect us to have kind of on the field, where do you want us to kick off the conversation?
So the offensive line depth is really cool. Because you've got your kind of 5 entrenched starters and Jeremiah Searles, and those guys are, you know, probably roster locks, right? And it's hard to see a situation where Danny Isadora gets cut. So that's 7 guys already, and you only really have 9 or 10 offensive line spots tribute after that. And just a rundown of who those have to go to. You've got Rashad Hill, Aviante Collins, the undrafted free agent, Nick Easton, Zach Kieran, Beavers, Clemmings, and the Arizona kid we just did, and another we just signed, and another guy named Reed Fragel. So if one of those, you know, kind of unknown guys blows up and has a good camp and earns a roster spot, you know, you're sitting with a world where like it's really hard to see Willie Beavers making this roster. Nick Easton is going to have a tough time making the roster. I actually think there's a real world where TJ Clemmings doesn't make the team and is just a straight up late August cut.
And I know that TJ getting cut is something that that Vikings Twitter has probably been calling for the last year and a half. JR, Miles, as kind of our resident film guys, what are your thoughts on that and the possibility of TJ being cut?
Y'all heard me say it plenty of times. I think TJ Clemmings is done, man. I think he's done. You know, coming out, TJ was a tremendous athlete. You know, you always hear he played basketball and all those other things that was referred to him, but I just think them switching him back and forth from right tackle to left tackle, his time here in Minnesota really just derailed his development. And I just think psychologically, I don't think there's any coming back, especially after last season. Last season was so brutal on him, and you just seeing him kind of give up at times and just like, I don't even want to be out here because I don't belong out here. And that's just how he looked from time to time. So I just don't know how he come back from that. And then you see a guy like Rashad Hill come in right after he went down in week 17, and the offense just took off from that. So I don't think Rashad Hill is a better player than him right now, but I think his ceiling is a lot higher than what TJ's is, just because, you know, TJ's a good, he's a way better athlete than what Rashad Hill is. But when Clemens goes to make contact with defenders, he just looks completely lost. But when Rashai Hill makes contact with defenders, he's still a bit raw, but the traits are there that you can develop. So I think they'll take that guy over a guy like Clemens.
Well, and I think to your point, JR, with Hill, I know you had done some film breakdown, I think, of Rashad Hill back when he was at the Jacksonville Jaguars preseason. He played right tackle, so it looks like he might have some of that position flexibility to play both and kind of be potentially be a backup at both spots if need be. So that could also hinder kind of make it harder for a guy like Clemens to make the team because Hill could be that swing tackle. I do think, you know, if – I mean – I feel bad for TJ Clemens. I feel like most people should at this point. I mean, he was not brought in to be a day one starter. He was brought in to kind of learn and develop and kind of because he was only coming in into his rookie year would have been his third season on the offensive line. So he wasn't ready, but he was his rookie year at right tackle. I mean, yeah, there were really a lot of bad parts, but it wasn't. There were some detrimental points to it, but like there was some. I thought if they'd kept him at right tackle, I'm trying to get to a certain point, but like I thought if they'd kept him at right tackle, he might have been able to develop into a decent backup player. And I think if they can get him to go back to that right tackle position and leave him there and don't move him, he might be able to still potentially do that. But again, it might just be a little too late for him.
I think TJ could have been a starter in the NFL if he would have been able to sit for 2 years. If this would have been his first year as a starter, I think he would have been ready. Just because of how good of an athlete he was coming out. He just had to figure out the part where he had to engage with defenders. That's what he struggled with in college as well, just because he was a D lineman for 2 years at Pitt. He only played offensive line 1 year at Pitt, so he still was a bit raw coming in, and he needed to sit at least 2 years.
Right.
And so if this would have been his first year, I think he would have been ready, but I just think now psychologically there's just no coming back from what he did last season.
So Luke, if TJ isn't making it in the kind of your O-line hot take, who's taking his place? Is it one of the undrafted guys they brought in, one of the tryouts? Like, who do you see replacing TJ?
So there's a chance that Aviante Collins just outplays him. There's a chance that Rashad Hill just outplays him. And even if they don't outplay him, you know, like JR said, the dude is just so mentally destroyed, you know, it might be better for him to, you know, give him a chance to maybe land on some other practice squad or something or somewhere else in football and have a fresh start. I also think that Jeremiah Searles can fill in that like swing tackle position, and he wasn't very good either, but I don't think he was as bad as Clemens. Point, do you have to cut ties with your third string swing tackle? And those other roster spots, then you can give to like Nick Easton and Isadora. And if one of those undrafted guys, you know, or only have 9 offensive linemen and, you know, spend another roster spot somewhere else on the team, which you might need it, you know, real bad.
I mean, I feel like personally, based off of last season, I just don't see them keeping just 9. I think that they might push to 10 just because of that. Just because of last season, it might be, you know, kind of a shock, spook type scenario. But, I mean, you might be right with that too, though.
I was thinking about because last season I was so convinced it would be, you know, we got to keep 10 on the offensive line just because of the injuries and stuff. But I think one of the issues that we were also having was, you know, also talent at, you know, at the very top as well, too. You know, Matt Khalil wasn't playing the greatest. I mean, we did see him, I think, start to get a little bit better, you know, before the injuries. But I think finally what the Vikings have is they're a lot more top heavy as far as their talent. So, you know, some of these depth guys, you know, we brought in a lot of depth, I think, in the previous seasons just because we're worried about the top guys getting injured. And now this season, I think we improved on the top. And now we're bringing in all this depth to actually, you know, kind of fill in those gaps so that we have a lot more, you know, we can move into an average unit. So I think this is probably the season I'm more okay with, you know, only rolling with 9 guys, you know, having, you know, most every position have a backup and then having the guy that can swing, whether it be in the interior or the, you know, exterior.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And before we move off the O-line, I guess Aviante Collins is a name that's come up a lot. People were really excited when we signed him as an undrafted. Luke brought him up a little while ago, I guess. Could one of y'all give me a scouting report on him or tell me, I guess, why it is we should be so excited about the Vikings bringing him in?
Extremely, extremely athletic offensive lineman. He actually ran the fastest 40 of any offensive lineman at the combine. I believe he ran a 4.77. So that's extremely good for offensive lineman. In my personal opinion, I don't think he's a tackle. I think he's more of a guard, just because that's where he can show off his athleticism a bit more, just because he's not very strong. And he tends to struggle with edge rushers for whatever reason. He's a good athlete, but he just has a tendency to struggle with edge rushers and guys that bull rush him on the perimeter, just because he's not very strong. He's a slight frame. I believe he's only like 285 to 290 pounds.
I think he's listed as 6'4", 295.
Yeah, so he's a bit thin to be a tackle, but, you know, I think he's a guy that can gain some weight and become a guard. I think he's a great developmental guy, but he's going to have to gain some weight before we see him on the field. Yeah,
practice, practice squad for me.
Definitely a practice squad candidate. So, but he's a good depth guy to have, and, you know, he really probably won't do nothing this upcoming season. He's more of a practice squad body.
Awesome. And one of the positions we've also talked about in recent weeks is the cornerback group. And so with you kind of digging in again, doing that research, Luke, can you give us your take on the cornerback group? Because that's a group that I personally am a bit nervous about. I feel like, and I know that you took some issues with my take on Twitter with, we have Rhodes, who's established, Newman, who's got his AARP card, and then a bunch of guys who really haven't proven anything yet. And that makes me nervous about our depth. I guess, what are your thoughts on the camp battles that we might see at that position and a player who might emerge and surprise us in terms of taking over a spot in that group?
Did I take issue? I don't have any issue with that take. I'm super worried about that.
Well, all right, then.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a thin group because, I mean, Newman, eventually time will catch up with him. You know, Wayne's still has some work to do. Mac Alexander has work to do. And really, the fourth guy behind them is like a battle between Jabari Price and Marcus Sherrills.
And Trey Roberson.
Trey Roberson.
So Sherrills is in that battle.
Huh?
Sherrills isn't in that battle at all. Let's be honest, Luke.
Hey, I mean, these are all guys who like were otherwise not making the team. I think there's a real world where Trey Roberson makes the 53-man roster and contributes situations and stuff, because all he really has to do is beat out Jabari Price.
Who's been injured two straight years.
Huh?
Who's been on the IR two straight years too, so.
Yeah, and he had off-field stuff last year, didn't he?
2 years ago, I think he had a DUI. He got suspended for the first two games and then he got hurt and then was put on IR the third week he was back. So I'll let you keep going, so I don't want to keep interrupting.
And you got a fun wild card back there in Terrell Sinkfield too, who's, you know, ridiculously fast, and we're determined beyond belief to find a way to put him on a football field. Wild card that might, you know, depending on the preseason, he'll be a fun name to watch in those games to see if he can pull anything out at quarterback. Super unlikely, but, you know, that fourth, fifth spot is kind of up for grabs between a bunch of guys that otherwise wouldn't really be making rosters. And that's super worrisome as a Vikings fan, but as a fan of preseason football, it'll be really fun to watch those guys basically battle for their NFL careers.
Oh, we got to get JR in here real quick because he's shaking his head. What's the take, JR? What you got to tell us about what Luke just said?
Come on, let's be real about Sinkfield, y'all.
I don't think he will.
He's just a tryout guy.
He is. He's a guy that, you know, they need a body for a camp. So I don't think he has a shot at all. I think we're gonna see the same guys that were on the depth chart as last year, minus Captain Munderland and Mackenzie Alexander taking his spot. I don't really know much about Jabari Price as far as, you know, what he's shown these past few years, just because he hasn't been on the field much. And I think our lack of corner depth is very scary, because if Rhodes or Newman goes down, we really don't have a lot of depth at outside corner. And, you know, losing Captain, we really don't have a bona fide slot guy. McKenzie's just a projection right now. I mean, he didn't play. I don't even think he played 50 snaps total on defense last year. And then when he was out there, he didn't really show a lot of promise. So cornerback is a big issue for me right now. We all know me and Jason aren't the biggest fans of Trey Waynes, and he still has a lot to prove to both of us. Yes, he showed a little bit of improvement last year, but he still had a lot of bad play mixed in there as well. So I don't want to see them spot play him this year, just because cornerback isn't a position where you can spot play a guy and expect him to show progress, because it's better to go into a week knowing that you are a starter as opposed to just being thrown in the fire, because cornerback is all about mental reps and, you know, just seeing – it's all muscle memory at the position. So Trey Waynes is a guy I want to see step up this year and hopefully take that job from Newman and, you know, see a guy like Newman rotate at slot corner, outside corner, and safety as needed. So cornerback is a big issue for me right now, and, you know, I wish them well. I hope they play well this year.
I don't think it's just a corner in general. I think it all, like, the entire DB position is in jeopardy right now. I mean, Harry just got off surgery. Deho just got off surgery. I mean, like, these guys, any one of these guys go down, we don't have very much depth behind them. I mean, we have J-Ron Curse, we have Tocho, Exum still around. So I'm worried about the entire secondary, to be perfectly honest with you.
I'm kind of surprised they haven't brought in another veteran at least at the cornerback position. There's a few guys out there that are some names that they could potentially bring. I wouldn't be surprised if they brought in a guy before training camp just to bring in as a camp body. You know, we've seen them bring in DBs. Yanka, what are you doing? Sorry. I was looking at Yanka. He's just looking over the ceiling with his mouth wide open. So, But we've seen the Vikings bring in veteran defensive backs the last few seasons since Zim's been in the been in charge, and it wouldn't surprise me if we saw them bring in a guy before camp, even if they don't expect him to make the team, but just kind of to push some of those younger guys like a Mackenzie Alexander, Trey Roberson, a Jabari Price, you know, Trey Waynes, you know, some of those guys. So wouldn't surprise me at all if they brought in a guy like that. And then personally, I think. I would love to. I think it's time to kind of let Trey Waynes see what he can do as a starter, and then kind of let Terrence Newman rotate around and fill in as needed. You know, I think that goes back to kind of what Yinka made the point of. We're pretty thin at defensive back depth in general. So, you know, if you need to let Terrence Newman come in and play safety a little bit, you know, you can do that with him. If you need him to come in and play nickel, he could do that too. So I just think what I like about Newman is. Save his body a little bit because he's, because he is getting up there in age. So you don't want to overuse him. I just think at some point he's gonna wear down at some point. So I'd prefer. I think if Trey Waynes doesn't if he does take that next step during camp and preseason and you kind of start seeing that, let Newman be that guy to kind of rotate around.
Sorry, I'm always finding ways to ruin the pod even when I'm not making noise. But I was yawning. I do agree with that, Miles. I'm not as low on Trey Waynes as Jason and JR are. I think some of the things that I have seen are positive that I see from Trey. I do feel like he can be that guy opposite Rhodes. I'm not going to give him the job, just like y'all aren't. But I am definitely going to give him a lot more opportunity to get that position. It's kind of like Treadwell, in my opinion. Both those players, you know, they have, I think, established vets in front of them or behind them, whichever way you look at it, that can obviously, you know, take their job just as easy because of the, you know, the play that they've shown over the past couple of years. But
we'll wrap this segment up on the cornerbacks anyway by just saying that you are wrong, and then we will transition into a discussion about Case Keenum versus Case Keenum. Taylor Heinicke. And the backup quarterback battle for the ages. Luke, what is your take on the backup QB battle?
I feel like we really fell in love with Taylor Heinicke for a guy who had one good preseason 2 years ago. Like, we don't know anything about him. He could continue that level of play. That could happen, and it could also not happen, and I don't think either would be very surprising. I do think evaluated as a backup is probably one of the better backups in the league. You know, when you look at other teams who are rocking like Matt Cassel and guys like that. But I do think that, like, if Taylor Heinicke has been progressing for these last 2 years the way we would hope, he could definitely beat Case Keenum out, and it'll be a really fun one to watch. And it's nice because they'll really be in the spotlight, you know, because they're quarterbacks. So in the third quarter of preseason games, you'll have something to actually pay attention to. And just remember that whichever one of those guys loses, if Teddy comes off the pup, and that makes the stakes for it really high. You know, every one of those preseason games is going to be like a Super Bowl for them.
And Miles, what's your take? Because I know that, you know, in previous discussions, either on Twitter or kind of in group messages, you've had some takes in terms of, you know, Case Keenum as the backup, the limited upside that you get from that, paying veterans versus maybe bringing in like a younger guy. What are your thoughts on this competition and how it plays out? And in a perfect world, what would you want to see come out of that?
Yeah. I mean, I was a big proponent on drafting a quarterback this year, and letting that, you know, drafted quarterback push these two guys, especially just because what we haven't seen is this team really draft and develop a, you know, a guy, you know, I'm talking about not like a Teddy Bridgewater, or, you know, a guy you bring in to expect to be an immediate starter, but like a, you know, a depth guy, like some of that you expect to come in and compete and be a really good backup and that, you know, you could trust to be a potential starter down the road. But
Joel,
don't even get me started. he's playing what? He's the kick returner and gunner for Carolina now.
Offensive weapons.
Emergency four-string quarterback. No, for real, I just think I would have liked to see them bring in a guy to kind of compete with these guys, because Taylor Heinicke, at least up to this point, was a Norv guy. He was brought in by Norv. You know, Norv really liked him in his system. And I do think he fits better in the West Coast system based off of what he did in college for a guy like Taylor Heinicke. So this might be a better move for him, you know, being in this kind of offense. So that might help him. But, I mean, again, like Luke had mentioned, he's an unknown. We haven't seen him really play in 2 years. So we don't know about him. So I have a hard time going into the season just trusting him. So I do think that's why they brought in a Case Keenum. But, again, Case Keenum doesn't excite anybody. What he does do at that, though, is like if you needed him to spot start for a game, he can win you a game. He's not a guy that's going to like be the big proponent on why you win a game, but he can win games in his league. So he's shown that. And so I think that's kind of important to have as a backup quarterback. So I think, you know, to Luke's point, him being a, you know, a decent backup in this league, it's true. That's what he is. But again, let's go back to, you know, at some point I want to see this team bring in a quarterback and develop him rightfully. You know, I thought Kaya was going to be that guy in like the fifth, sixth, you know, heading into the seventh round. But I think Detroit might have swooped in and took him before we had the chance to. But again, I thought we should have done it in the sixth round anyways, with him falling that far. But it's neither here nor there now.
Yeah, no need to go back through all that again. And before we Luke out of here, because we have had him a little bit longer than we initially requested him for, I guess, does anyone else have any hot takes about any of the stuff that we brought up?
I don't think Taylor Heinicke will be on the roster by the end of training camp.
Okay. All right. Well, Luke, you get to follow up that bit of fire from Yinka. If you could just once again let everyone know what you have upcoming, when it's going to drop, where they can find it, how they can interact with you on Twitter. You know the deal, all that good stuff.
Yeah, so I run the Purple PTSD Twitter at Purple PTSD. It's a Twitter for the website, purpleptsd.com. But usually if you tweet at that, you'll get me. I'm going to start dropping these position battle articles on Tuesdays, starting next Tuesday. I'm going to start with the QB one and then move on from there. So keep an eye on that Twitter account. Keep an eye on purpleptsd.com. We have a pretty active community on Facebook. So if you join, if you like Purple PTSD on Facebook, you can get involved with some of the other fans. And boy, the Facebook fans are real fun.
That's awesome, man. Well, thank you for coming on tonight, coming on and blessing us with some of your knowledge there, your QB takes. And we absolutely will be looking for the series when it drops and retweeting it from all of our accounts to make sure that everyone gets a chance to check that out. So thanks, guys. Luke.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Thanks, Luke.
Have a good one.
Thanks, Luke.
Okay, so we are back. Hope you enjoyed the interview that we had with Luke from Purple PTSD. And before we get you out of here, we have a very, very important public service announcement that we need to get to. A scourge that has been going through the social media space that has to be addressed on this evening's recording of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. And it's the male romper or romp him fashion fad trend, whatever we're going to call it, that seems to be sweeping social media, sweeping the nation. Gentlemen, what are your takes on the romp him? Yinka, how many of you purchased already? JR, Are you going shopping with Cam to get a brand new one? Gentlemen, give me your thoughts. Let me know where you're at on the romp him.
Okay, well, I'll start first. For y'all who don't know, I'm Nigerian. I'm African. So I don't specifically have a romp him, but I have grown up around specifically men who wear romp hims. If you go to Nigeria, I promise you, every other man has some form of a romp him. And not just romp him, he's wearing open-toed shoes and he's playing soccer in his front yard with a romp him. So, I mean, all this outrage, you know, not real men don't wear romp him. I'm telling you, go outside America and you will see men wearing romp him. Cam Newton dresses up like your auntie from the barbecue every single press conference that he does after a game, right? Every single one. And we're going to complain that men are now wearing rompers and stuff. I've seen people who fix cars, cut off their arms. Basically, it's too hot, cut off their legs. And they basically wearing a romp him as well, too. So, I mean, for me, it's cool because at the end of the day, what you wear will never define your sexuality. What you wear will never define you as a man. I mean, some of the fragility that we have as far as what masculinity is kind of just needs to go away.
So can we skip to the end where you tell us how many romp hims you've already purchased?
Okay, well, I have four on back order. So
I'm telling you, if Teddy Bridgewater comes out wearing one, Yinka will have it the next day. I promise you.
Absolutely. With the number five on the back. What's really going to get you crazy if number five's on the back and it has a little teddy bear on the front. So I got the romp him purple and gold with the teddy on the front, number five on the back. And I'm sitting there cheering Teddy, Teddy in the stadium.
The real question that is, are you going to be rocking some lugs for our boy Josh?
You showed the real picture of him too, but I'm not going to get into that.
So where you at, JR? Because you over here, you shaking your head more than you were when Yankee was eating that popsicle earlier on the pod.
I just don't even know what to say. It's only a matter of time until we see Odell Beckham with one on. We all know that.
Stephon Diggs and Odell Beckham are in a race to see who can put one on first.
Russell Westbrook too.
Oh yeah,
he's another guy. Yeah, I just don't even know. I don't have any words for this topic. It's just some things you shouldn't wear as a man.
Well, since we got JR speechless, I really got nothing else to add to this discussion that's going to be anything that anyone needs to hear. So I'm just going to end this by saying thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to us on iTunes. Follow us on Stitcher. Rate the pod. Say nice things about us. Please.
Follow us on Twitter, too.
Yeah, all that stuff. Follow us on Twitter. Climb_the_pockets. And you can interact with all of us wonderful young men all the time. Well, three of these dudes and then my old behind.
That's a funny thing you should bring up. You know, I should do that. I should go to Kanye and I'm just like, hey, man, I got these customized romp hims that we need to do. They're going to be all NFL jerseys. Yeah. I can guarantee you.
I pity the fool who shows up to the NFL game with all them drunk fools rocking Vikings romp him.
It's gonna be the drunk fool to do it.
I feel like that won't go down the way that he was hoping it would.
But it's gonna be the drunk fool to do it. But anyway,
Migos are playing right now anyway, so I don't know why we still talking. Y'all have a good night. All right.
Pausing.
Well, there's no need. I'll just chop this part out the middle.
Yeah, was that your TV or Yinka's?
Yeah, it was my TV.
Wow. I called you, Yinka.
I was waiting, y'all. I was waiting. I'm like, someone else gonna mess us up this time.
Was it loud?
A little, you could hear a little bit in the background.
Oh, God. Nah,